If it's Thursday, 6 p.m., that means it's time for Perspectives by John Pierce. Welcome to Perspectives by John Pierce. I'm your host, and we have a very special program for you this evening, something that you didn't think you would ever hear in your lifetime. A conversation between General George Washington and Lady Washington, Martha, his wife. Let's listen in.
We are so pleased to be with you this evening to talk to you a little about our lives. My name is General George Washington, and may I present my wife, Lady Washington.
Good evening. It is so lovely to be here. And I think you may have always thought of us as old folk, looking stern in those later portraits. And George is rather stoic in public, but I think this evening you will see a softer side to him. We would like you to get to know us as we were before old age had its way with us, wouldn't we, old man? I always call him that, even though I am actually almost 9 months older. 8 years of war were harder on him than they were on me. So, George, you should tell them about Newburg.
Yes, dear. We were both 43 years of age when the war started, but those long and arduous years did take a heavy toll on not only my hearing, but also on my eyesight. In March of 1783, towards the end of the conflict, some officers were considering rising up against Congress because they had not been paid, among other grievances. I determined to speak with them and had a letter to read from Congress, but found required the use of my spectacles to do so. As I commenced reading, I sought the spectacles out of my coat pocket, saying to the men, "Gentlemen, you must pardon me. I've grown gray in your service and now find myself going blind." This produced quite the emotional response from my men as they realized I had spent a lifetime in service to our country. But we weren't always like this, were we, Martha?
No, of course not. We were young once. So I guess we should tell them a little bit about how we met. I was born in 1731, and I was known as Patsy Dandridge, because Patsy was the typical nickname for Martha in those days. I was therefore Patsy Dandridge until I was about 19 years old when I married my first husband, Daniel Park Custis. He came from one of the oldest and wealthiest colonial families, and so when I married him in 1750, I became a wealthy woman of social status. In 1751, I gave birth to our first son, and his name was Daniel Park Custis, just like his father. Then we had a little girl. We named her Fanny. Well, sadly, when Fanny was 10 months old, my little Daniel died of malaria just after his second birthday. And around the time of his funeral, I discovered that I was again with child. And in 1754, I gave birth to my second son. We named him John, like yourself, but we always called him Jackie. Now, just 2 years after his birth, my life would change because my mother and I both gave birth to little girls. I had my second daughter named Martha, Patsy. My mother gave birth to my littlest sister, Mary. Unfortunately, when my little sister Mary was about, I don't know, 5.5 months old, my father died suddenly of apoplexy, a stroke, leaving my mother a widow with small children to raise, and it seemed to be prophetic because only a year later, my little Fanny died just before her fourth birthday.
Oh.
Yes, it was terribly tragic. And only a few months after this tragedy, my husband Daniel fell ill on July 4th and died on July 8th, leaving me a widow at 26 years old with two babies to raise and five plantations to run.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it was a terrible time, but I had no intention of remaining unmarried for long. Besides, it would have been rather strange for a wealthy widow such as myself not to remarry. And I needn't have worried because I was being courted very soon by an older gentleman by the name of Charles Carter. But truth is, I was preferring somebody younger, like you, my love.
Yes, I was younger. I was born on February 22nd, 1732, at Pope's Creek in Westmoreland County, Virginia. My parents were Augustine and Mary Ball Washington. I was the oldest of their six children. I had two older half-brothers, Lawrence and Augustine, from my father's first marriage. Had a normal childhood up until about the time of my 11th birthday when my father died a month after in April of 1743. Due to that, my older brothers inherited most of the plantations and the land holdings, and I would inherit a home at Ferry Farm. And also, I wasn't able to travel overseas for an education due to my father's death, so I was tutored and educated close to home those days. When I was 14, Lawrence, who had become like a second father to me, suggested I join the Royal Navy. However, my mother, upon hearing I'd be treated like a dog in that service, was against it, so I honored her wishes. So I set about to take up in learning the art of surveying from a set of instruments my father left behind. When I was 17, I was commissioned as the first official surveyor for Culpeper County, Virginia. And I stayed in that trade for quite some time. My brother Lawrence had married into the Fairfax family. He married Ann Fairfax. They're one of the wealthiest families of all Virginia. And we derived a lot of pleasure from the time that their estate. And when the fall of 1751 came, Lawrence and I sailed out of the country to Barbados. This would be the only time I left the colonies in my entire life. We went down there seeking a remedy for his health. He was dying of tuberculosis. I was stricken by smallpox while I was there, too, but recovered in a few weeks. I sailed home at the beginning of 1752. Lawrence stayed behind seeking additional remedy for his illness and returned to the colonies in June, but unfortunately I lost my older brother the following month in July. I remained in the surveying trade up until the time I was commissioned as a major in the Virginia Regiment, a colonial commission. That vacancy that I filled was made possible due to Lawrence's death. What I truly desired, though, was a royal commission. This would be the only way I'd be able to rise in Virginia society and travel in the same social circles as the Fairfax family, a lifestyle that I truly desired.
Yes, George and I had traveled in some of the same social circles, but I was a married woman, of course, and he had his own love interests. But then a time came when Providence interceded to bring us together.
Yes, it did, my love. Mm-hmm. I was returning to Williamsburg in March of 1758, and on the road was met by a friend, Richard Chamberlain. He kindly invited me to join his family for dinner at their plantation on the Pamunkey River. I must say, I was pleasantly surprised to find you, my dear, among the company.
Oh, you're so sweet. Yes, they were my friends and neighbors, and they had invited me and the children to come visit, and I was equally pleased to see you, my love. I, of course, knew who the now famous George Washington was, because he had made quite a name for himself during the French and Indian War. But previously, he had known me only as Mrs. Custis, Daniel's wife. Now I was the Widow Custis, arguably the wealthiest widow in the colony of Virginia. Maybe that's why you chose to come courting my love? I'm
Martha,
not naive.
Martha, I can never fool you, my dear.
No, you can't.
But yes, it is true. I knew that I needed to marry well in order to rise socially. But I would never marry anyone who was not agreeable or amiable. You were the perfect consort for me, Patsy.
Oh, well, I have to tell you, I don't think George fell in love with me right away, but we knew we were a good match. And may I confide in you that I fell in love with him from the moment I laid eyes on him that day?
Oh.
Yes, we spent a lovely evening in conversation, and I was immediately and intensely attracted to this handsome man. And he came to visit me three times at White House after that first meeting and tipped my servants well so as to impress me, I think. Our courtship was brief, but we decided to marry in the new year of 1759.
And that was the same year that England had won Quebec from the French. But it didn't matter to us personally because I had decided to resign my colonial commission. I realized I would never obtain the royal commission that I'd so long sought after. Besides that, also, the war with the French and Indians had moved to the northern colonies, and I wanted to spend more time with Martha and the children at Mount Vernon. So, I'd also been elected as a delegate to the Virginia House of Burgesses for Frederick County. With the addition of Martha's wealth, I can now become that gentleman farmer that I'd always desired to be.
Yes, and we did decide to marry on Twelfth Night. Now, you may know that January 6th is Twelfth Night, and that's always a good time to have a wedding because the house is already decorated for the holidays. Friends and family come to call. So we were married in the parlor at White House, which was my main plantation home, with not only our friends and family, but also my two children, Jackie and Patsy, who were, what would you say, my love, almost
four
at that time. And after that, George had decided that we would not live at White House, that we would live at his inherited estate of Mount Vernon. And it was beautiful in the spring. So we did move there in April with the children. And I set up house right away. We lived simply at that time. We both of us rose before dawn. I would spend an hour or so in devotions with my Bible, teach the children. I would instruct the household staff as to what to do, because there was always so much to do, as you might imagine.
Oh, yes.
And cooking happened all day. Around 3 o'clock, George would ride in from the fields, and he would change his clothes and powder his hair. Now, very important for you to know, my husband never wore a wig, not ever. So all of those portraits, all of those busts that you see, he's not wearing a wig.
Interesting.
Yes, he would curl his hair on the side sometimes and powder it, of course. And he doesn't have wooden teeth, but we can talk about that later. So in any case, around the dinner hour, we would do that. He would come back, and then we would, in the afternoon, go visiting, or we would have visitors come to Mount Vernon. We would, in the afternoon, have afternoon tea, light supper. Then in the evenings, we would adjourn to the parlor, where we could sing, we could read, write letters, play games, even dance. George had inscribed for me a copy of The Bullfinch. It was a collection of popular English songs. And I don't know if you remember this, my love, but you inscribed it for me. And it was the first time that you had written out my name, Martha Washington.
I do remember, but I still called you Patsy, though.
You did.
We had hoped that we would have children of our own. But after 12 years or so, we realized it wasn't going to happen. I raised little Jackie and Patsy Custis as my own. I was their guardian and the custodian of the Custis estate. I adored little Patsy. She was such a sweet and amiable little child. Jackie was more of a challenge, though. He did not appreciate all of the opportunities that he had for an education. You spoiled the boy, my dear.
Yes, I think I did, a little bit. But having lost two children already, I suppose that I was a little overprotective of the two that were remaining to me. But you were an excellent and kind stepfather to Jackie and Patsy, and they loved you. Now, even though George and I were not able to have children of our own, we do consider those our golden years. Very happy. I don't think anyone would have imagined that England winning the French and Indian War in 1763 would have led to revolution, but it did.
It did. All through the 1760s, we remained loyal to the crown. However, due to the debt accrued from fighting the French and Indian War, Parliament passed and repealed numerous measures against the colonies to raise taxes. But we had no representation in that Parliament.
No, none at all. But the year that stands out in my mind during that time is 1768, and it has nothing to do with politics. That year, my Patsy, she began to have violent seizures. She'd had seizures throughout her childhood, and we had tried to find remedies and cures. But as she reached adolescence, these seizures became worse. And in our time, there was no cure for what you call epilepsy. So her care, her health, became the center of my life, and it made it a little easier to send Jackie off to boarding school, something I never thought that I'd be able to do, but Jackie studied little and socialized much. School was not his strong suit.
No, it was not, but I did everything in my power to provide him an education that would allow him to run his own estates in the future, but nothing could induce that boy to study.
No.
Then in 1772, he announced that he wished to leave school forever and to marry. He was only 18 years of age. I thought he too young to take on the responsibilities of a wife and family. However, we did welcome that young woman to question into Mount Vernon, did we not?
Yes, we certainly did. Her name was Eleanor Calvert. Nellie, and she was a good girl from a fine family, and she looked so much like my Patsy that the two girls could have passed for sisters. And they were close in age, as Nellie was 15, I guess Patsy was 16 at the time that they met. And I became very fond of Nellie, and I have to say, this was one time that George and I disagreed vehemently. I was not opposed at all to the marriage. I thought that maybe what Jackie needed was a good woman to keep him on the straight and narrow.
Let's hold it right there, Martha. We need to take a break now and jump back into the 21st century. I'm John Pierce, your host here on Perspectives. perspectives, and what an interesting conversation. Many facts about General George Washington and wife Martha that you never heard before. Time for us to take a break, so hang in there, and we'll be right back with more of these interesting stories.
The World Blend is an international mix of music traditions, exploring new music and familiar favorites from indie rock, reggae, zydeco, afro pop, and roots music from every continent. An adventurous soundtrack for your Saturday afternoon, whether busy or relaxed. Join us Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m. for The World Blend, right here on WDIY.
And we're back with Martha Washington telling us a story about Patsy.
Yes. So as I was saying, my son, Jackie, was interested in this young woman named Nellie, who we would entertain frequently at Mount Vernon, even while Jackie was away at school. And Nellie and my daughter Patsy became fast friends. And one day in June 1773, that was the situation, but I don't feel that I can tell it again. George, you tell the story.
It was on a Saturday, the 19th of June, 1773. We had just risen from dinner table shortly after 4 o'clock, and Patsy appeared to be in better health and spirits she had been in some time. Shortly thereafter, she was seized by one of her usual fits, and in less than 2 minutes, she expired without uttering a word, a groan, or scarce a sigh. She died there in my arms. This sudden and unexpected blow reduced my poor Martha to the lowest ebb of misery, which was only made worse because we had just put Jack in school in New York.
It was the most terrible time. I don't know if you can realize the depths of my despondency. And only 6 months after my daughter died, we heard about the destruction of the tea cargo in Boston Harbor, which made us realize that conflict with the mother country was no longer going to be able to be avoided. And, George relented, and he allowed Jackie and Nellie to marry in 1774 because Nellie and I had formed such a bond over Patsy's death, and he knew that I needed her. So I did not attend the wedding, though, because I did not want to cast a pall on the happy occasion in my mourning clothes. And then they called the First Continental Congress. Little did I realize that 1774 would be our last year of peace before we stepped irrevocably onto the stage of American history.
I was elected to that First Continental Congress, and again to the second in 1775. In April, shots had been fired at Lexington Concord. We were now in open rebellion against the crown. I wore my uniform to that Continental Congress to make it openly known that I was willing and ready to serve, to do my duty, even though I had not been in uniform in 16 years. I was nominated by John Adams to be the Commander-in-Chief and unanimously elected by Congress to be just that. However, I did share my feelings of great distress from a conscience that my abilities and military experience may not be equal to the task I was honored with. However, I would exert every power I had within my possession in support of our glorious cause. We had a long 8-year Revolutionary War. Famous battles come to mind. Encampments come to mind. Crossing the Delaware in 1776. Trenton that night, followed up by Princeton. Then we had Valley Forge encampment that lasted 6 months. Yep. General von Steuben appeared in 1778 and transformed my army into a fighting force. In 1783, toward the end of conflict, the last major engagement we had was the siege and surrender of Cornwallis at Yorktown. 2 years after, the Treaty of Paris is signed. Those 13 colonies are now recognized to be free, sovereign, and independent states. Shortly thereafter, the country started falling apart. In 1787, I was a delegate and the president of the Constitutional Convention. We were operating under the Articles of Confederation, but they were woefully inadequate. Under the Articles, we couldn't pass legislation, couldn't collect taxes to fund our own operations, couldn't maintain an effective military, and could not even back our own currency. We needed to revise or replace that document. So in Philadelphia, from May through September of 1787, the Constitutional Convention, we replaced and came up with a whole new governing document, our Constitution. We submitted it for Congress and ratification to the states. And the following year, in June 1788, New Hampshire became the ninth state necessary to ratify and place that new constitution, our new government, in place. It started on March 4th, 1789, and I was sworn in as president on April 30th, the following month. We served two long terms, didn't we, Martha?
Yes, we did.
Yep. From 1789, 1793, and again through the second term through 1797. On March 4th, 1797, with the newly elected, sworn-in president, John Adams, I recall saying to him, "I am fairly out. You are fairly in. So which of us will be happiest?"
And we were happy to finally return to Mount Vernon. And I am very proud of the role that we played. And thank you so much for having us here today to talk to you a little bit about our lives.
Martha and George, what a treat for us to have our listeners listen in on your conversation. Martha Washington, portrayed by Elisa Dupuy. She's a retired French teacher from Princeton Public Schools and Lafayette College, has had a lifelong interest in history, and turned that interest into a business, portraying famous women in history. What's the business called?
It is called The Ladies of History.
And Elisa's goal is to bring this devoted patriot to life, or the patriots that she portrays, because you do different ladies of history. How many different ones do you do?
Oh, gosh. I think I do over 35 different women. But specifically coming up for America's 250th birthday, so everyone's referring to it as America 250, but it's actually the semi-quincentennial, I have a Revolutionary War series. So I portray Annice Boudinot Stockton, who was the wife of Richard Stockton, a signer. And she talks about the contributions of many different women throughout the Revolution. I do also Mary Jemison, the white woman of the Genesee, so we get a Native American perspective. I also portray Eliza Hamilton. I also portray Adrienne Lafayette, the wife of General Lafayette, as well as Martha Washington. So we're hoping to create some interest around the birthday, and I connected with Kurt, who portrays General Washington, so that we could bring George and Martha's love story to life for audiences.
Wonderful. So you're bringing history to life in a really interesting way. You're reminding us of women's contributions to the American cause. General George Washington and President Washington also, portrayed by Kurt Radebaugh. Kurt has had a lifelong fascination with George Washington, and he has achieved his goal of portraying this great man. By the way, I consider, for some people, it might be a close call. Who's the greatest president of all? Would it have been Washington? Would it have been Lincoln? A lot of times those two are considered neck and neck. And I come down on the side of Washington because he refused to go for a third term as president and set us on a course that stood us up until FDR came along as two terms for the president. And now it's law as of President Eisenhower's presidency. But just telling this new nation, we don't need somebody to go on and on and on. We need to spread the wealth. And I wonder if George Washington's desire to step out of the public life and get back to the farm that he loved had a lot to do with that.
General Washington, President Washington's first love was farming.
Yeah.
After the French and Indian War, he wanted to be at Mount Vernon through those 1760s that we spoke of, up until the time of the First Continental Convention, Constitutional. I mean, and even then, in 1787, he wanted to be a farmer. That was his first love, first and foremost. While he was away doing all these events, French and Indian War, Revolutionary War, Constitutional Convention, the presidency, he was in writing daily letters much of the time to his managers at Mount Vernon that were looking at the estate, how to do the crop rotations, how to change and preserve the soil. Everything about his farm took up a lot of his time, and he wrote about it. Why was it Valley Forge? He would write about it at the other encampments. So, yes, when it came time at the end of that second term, first and foremost, he wanted to get back to his family and his farm.
Yes, indeed.
That was his first love.
I never knew that he had spent time writing letters back to the farm, telling them how they should do all these things.
He was in constant contact. For example, one of the cousins, Lund Washington. There's many letters back and forth for him. There's many letters that traversed the Atlantic Ocean for gentlemen over in England about farming and farming techniques and all these different things.
Farming was his love.
Farming was absolutely his first love.
Well, this is the voice of Kurt Radebaugh. He is a veteran and retired law enforcement officer and seeks to continue his life of service by helping to preserve the United States' past for a new generation. A noble calling, sir.
Yes. Thank you very much, sir. I guess I'm just following in the footsteps of the gentleman I portray.
Great. We found out today one thing that I never knew, and that is that Martha was older than George.
Yes, not by much, but she was.
She was a cradle robber.
but yet she continues to call me her old man.
Yes. It's interesting to note that Martha spent over 50% of the war with her husband. She was with him in every winter encampment, pretty much, and he sort of considered her his sounding board, his closest advisor.
What a lot of people don't realize, I was away from home for the vast majority of those 8 years when Martha was in the encampments. She brought the feeling of Mount Vernon home to me at those encampments. She wasn't just essential to the cause, she was essential to me. And as she often refers to, when I say that the officers were always as relieved as I was when she would arrive in camp, would you like to tell them why that is, dear?
Well, yes, because you were always so grouchy until I got there.
General Washington.
She was the greatest comfort during the darkest of times.
And how tall was George?
6'2", 6'3". It depends on when you ask and who you ask and who took the measurements, but 6'2" and a half to 6'3".
Yeah, just a little bit shorter than Abraham Lincoln.
Well, I understand something about that individual. He had an awful tall hat. Did that help?
That's true.
And Martha was only 5 feet tall, so he stood over a foot taller than she.
Yes.
And this is the voice of Elisa Dupuy. And Elisa, you told me that when you are portraying ladies of history, that you portray only those who are roughly your stature.
Yes, I prefer to physically resemble the women that I portray. So Martha Washington was an easy choice. Also Queen Victoria, for example.
You'd have to put on a lot of padding to do her, wouldn't you?
Well, actually, I portray her as she was in 1861. So she was, even though they referred to her as their fat little queen, she was only 5 feet tall, but about 125 pounds.
Oh.
So, yes. So
she looks heftier than that.
Later she was, yes. That is very true. And same with Martha Washington. Martha Washington wasn't always the matronly old lady that we see in portraits, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to bring her to life, because we always think of George and Martha as this old couple looking just terrible in the later portraits. Right. And that really wasn't the case at all. They were a vibrant early middle age, I guess. We wanted people to get to know them and get to see them as that middle-aged couple that were very much in love, they were very much attracted to each other, and very important to each other during the Revolution.
And one regret I have that being on the radio, our listeners cannot see the gorgeous costumes that you have adorned today. We're going to take a picture, right, James? And so our folks will be able to see you on the newsletter.
That's very nice.
When you come out.
Thank you.
Well, we have run out of time to hear about the Washingtons today. I know that you've enjoyed it and that you've learned a lot about the relationship between Martha and George Washington. And now we're into the 250th year. What is it called?
The semi-quincentennial.
So, listeners, thank you for tuning in. James Zibrot, thank you again for your good work as our engineer. I'm John Pierce here on WDIY. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.